So hi everyone, I'm Sergey. I'm going to talk about Flamingo, which is a tool that helps designing nearline storage for the cloud. So one thing we know today is that a significant fraction of the data we store in the cloud is actually rarely accessed. And therefore, storing this cold data efficiently and at the lowest possible cost has become one of the main challenges of cloud-based storage. And it turns out that one efficient solution is to design custom rack-scale storage. So here, the idea is that because this data is rarely accessed, it makes sense to trade off latency of access to reduce cost. So these racks are typically hard disk-based. However, compared to traditional JBOD-type storage, the amount of physical resources, such as power or cooling, are massively under-provisioned at the scale of the rack, such as only a fraction of the hard disk can be concurrently active. So for example, here are two designs by Microsoft and Facebook, and in both cases, less than 10% of the disks can be concurrently active due to resource restrictions. These racks typically also have only one or two servers, meaning that each server now manages about an order of magnitude more disks than JBOD storage. So all this increases latency, obviously. However, it massively benefits cost, both in terms of CapEx, because we remove expensive servers from the rack, but also OpEx, because the resource consumption is now nicely capped by design, and the storage density is higher as well. However, a massive challenge is that designing these cold storage racks is very hard. And this is due to the fact that under-provisioned resources create constraints at the scale of the rack that need to be managed efficiently. So, for example, in Pelican, 8% of the disks can be concurrently active. But that's not any 8%. What can or cannot be active actually depends on the topology of the rack. So, for example, power is distributed horizontally along trays, and two disks can be active concurrently per tray. Cooling is done vertically, and only one disk can be active per air column. And you have similar constraints in terms of vibration and bandwidth that span the rack. And if these constraints are violated, bad things can happen to the hardware. We can have increased failure rates, we can have unavailability, and therefore, the storage stack needs to be co-designed together with the hardware in order to efficiently operate within and enforce these constraints at runtime. And in particular, there are two components, the data layout and the I/O scheduler, that need to be constraint-aware. So the data layout determines on which disks data should be stored, and the I/O scheduler determines what should be active at any given time. And we designed Pelican, and one thing we learned from that is that it's very hard to design these two components, because we have basically hundreds of different resource constraints, hundreds of disks, and it took us many months to figure out the most efficient data layout and I/O scheduler. In addition to that, because the software now encompasses the constraints, it's very brittle to design changes in the hardware. So even a slight redesign of the hardware requires changing the storage stack in a non-trivial way. So for example, halfway through the design of Pelican, we found out that some of the hard disks we're going to use were very sensitive to vibration, which led us to introduce an additional constraint and rethink how the data layout should be done. And finally, an additional challenge is very hard to estimate the impact of the different resources and how they're provisioned on the final performance. Now, answering questions like, how much of each resource should I provision in order to reduce the latency by 20% in average? This is very hard to answer. So for that, we designed Flamingo, which is a tool that helps designing these custom racks. It will take an input, a rack description, which is a very high-level abstraction of the rack, including its topology and how resources are distributed to disks, and a set of performance goals showing, describing how the rack should behave. And the tool will output a resource provisioning specification that will basically tell how much of each resource should I provision given the topology in input and the performance goals. And this could be used to design a more efficient rack. And it will also output the data layout and the I/O scheduler parameters that can be used to configure a generic storage stack that will run on top of these racks and will enforce all its constraints. So Flamingo operates in three stages. First, it starts by the resource provisioning exploration, and it will take the initial rack description provided in input, and it will generate a set of derivative rack descriptions that have the same topology but have a different resource provisioning that yields a different performance. Then for each of them, it will use a constraint solver to generate a data layout and the I/O scheduler parameters that are efficient with this configuration. And it will evaluate each of these configurations in a discrete event simulator to compare, to estimate the end performance. So in this talk, I will elaborate on how we can describe racks. Then I'll describe how we do the storage stack configuration. And finally, end up with the resource provisioning exploration. So the rack description is a very high-level abstraction of the rack hardware. And the most important thing it describes is how resources are distributed within the rack. And for that, it relies on the concept of a resource domain, which is basically a set of hard disks that collectively share a limited resource. So for example, here we have four disks that are part of domain A, and the domain has a type, which is power, and a budget, which is 40 watts. And this is saying that these four disks should never exceed more than 40 watts of budget for power. And domains can have arbitrary types, they can have arbitrary budgets, they can overlap. So for example, we could have domain B with a type vibration and a budget of one, meaning that among these two disks, only one can be vibrating at any given time. And so you can have arbitrary number of these resource domains describing how resources are distributed. So here we could have four domains for vibration and two domains for power. And in addition to that, the rack description describes what the hard disk is doing. So at the very high level, we describe a hard disk as a state machine in which each state corresponds to an operating state for the disk. So it could be, for example, standby, spin up, or active, or any low RPM mode that the disk is able to support. So for each state, the rack description tells how much of each resource type the disk is consuming in that state. So for example, in standby, it consumes very little power and it's not vibrating because it's not spinning. In the state machine, we also specify the initial state in which the disk starts and all the states in which the disk is capable of doing I/O, here only active. And together, this hard disk description and the resource domains express constraints on resources. So for example, here, we can say that only one hard disk can be spinning up in domain one, because that's the only thing that's below budget. So for example, if we have three disks in standby and one spinning up, we consume 26 watts of power budget, which is okay. And now if we try to spin up an additional disk, we exceed the budget, which means that we violate the constraint. And the user can tag these constraints are either hard or soft. So if they're hard, they should never be violated. But if they're soft, it means that they'll probably yield some performance degradation. So given this rack description, the Flamingo will extract all these constraints and will feed them into a constraint solver that will be used to generate an efficient data layout parameters. So in Flamingo, files or blobs are erasure encoded over a set of disks, and the erasure encoded erasure coding parameters are determined by Flamingo giving some input, and details are in the paper. But the takeaway here is that each file or blob corresponds to a set of disks. And the key here is that for efficiency, we enforce that all the disks that correspond to a blob can concurrently transition to any state. So that, for example, if we want to read the blob, all the disks can transition into an I/O-capable state so that the blob can be efficiently accessed. So the constraint solver will form groups of disks that can concurrently transition state, and it will try to maximize the number of these groups that can be concurrently active by minimizing the number of resource conflicts between the groups. So the details of the constraint solver are in the paper, but I will give you the intuition here. With this simple example, if we try to form groups of two disks, and if we just pick these two disks, this is not a valid group because these two disks cannot concurrently transition to any state because of the vibration constraint. On the contrary, if we select D8, this is actually a valid group because they can transition together to any state. And if we repeat the pattern, we end up with four groups of two disks that are all valid. So this is a valid data layout. However, we can see that it's slightly inefficient because now each group conflicts with two other groups due to the vibration constraint. And it's easy to see that by rearranging the data, how groups are chosen very slightly, we can reduce this number of conflicts to just one. So each group conflicts with another group only. And the constraint solver will perform a guided search among all the different groups layouts and will find the one that minimizes the conflicts. And it will express this as a group definition. Then, given that, it will express conflicts between group. So remember the RAC description I was describing in the previous slide? So it expresses constraints over disks. And so the solver will transform this into constraints over groups by simply replacing the disk ID by the ID of the corresponding group. So here we obtain this constraint over groups. And in general, we have all these groups that express constraints on groups. And we can see here that these constraints are somehow, some of them are redundant because, for example, G2, G1, and G1, G2 actually express the same constraint. So we can compress them and have only three intergroup constraints that show that G1 and G2 cannot be concurrently active. G3 and G4 is the same, and all these four groups should never exceed 40 watts of budget for power. So this group definition and the intergroup constraints will be used to configure a generic storage stack. So the group definition will be used for the data layout in order to select the disks on which blobs will be stored. And the intergroup constraints are used by the I/O scheduler, which will determine on the current state of the rack and the queue of incoming requests what are the groups that can be spun up without violating the intergroup constraints. So now we know how to configure the storage stack for any RAC description provided in input. So we can use it to actually explore the impact of resource provisioning on performance. So intuitively, if we have n resource types, this represents a very large n-dimensional space of RAC descriptions, in which all the RAC descriptions have exactly the same topology, but each one will have its own resource provision. So for example, if we take n equals 2 with power and vibration, we can see that we can identify the example in the previous slide with a budget for power for 40 and vibration budget of 1. If we change even slightly the resource, the budget for power, which we can do, we can set it to 40.1, we can set it to 100, 1,000, and they all represent valid RAC descriptions that can be built. And so we can see that overall in this gray area, we have an infinite number of valid RAC descriptions that can express existing RACs. But luckily, we don't need to explore all this space. We just need to identify a very small subset of RAC descriptions that is actually worth exploring. And I'm going to now show how we can do that. So we start by identifying two extreme RAC descriptions. One is the fully provisioned one, in which all the hard disks can be simultaneously in their most resource-consuming state. So in the previous example, that would be a power budget of 80 and a vibration budget of 2, which will correspond to all the 8 disks being in spin-up mode concurrently. On the contrary, on the other side of the spectrum, we have the least provisioned rack, in which only one disk per domain can transition in the lowest I/O-capable state, whereas all the other ones need to remain in their lowest capable state. So, for example, here in this example, this corresponds to 3 disks in standby and 1 transition into active, which requires only 26 watts of power. And it is possible to move from the least provisioned track to the fully provisioned track by identifying the bottleneck resource that prevents more disks from spinning up and gradually relaxing it. So intuitively, this means moving along this line from the least provisioned to the fully provisioned track. Basically, this line represents the set of configuration that are well-balanced. Because above this line, we basically over-provision power, and below the line, we over-provision vibration without any benefit. And so when we relax the bottleneck resource, we increase it by just the amount that allows another disk to transition in their higher resource-consuming state. And so effectively, instead of having a line, we have a discrete set of configurations. So here, for example, if the vibration is the bottleneck resource at the beginning, we start by relaxing vibration, and we move horizontally. And then at some point, power becomes the bottleneck. And so we start relaxing power, moving vertically, until we reach the fully provisioned rack. And so this helps selecting a very small subset among an infinite number of rack descriptions. And so, for example, for Pelican, this represents only 747 rack descriptions. And this is a number that we can explore. So now that I described how Flamingo worked, let's have a look at the performance. So the first thing we wanted to understand is whether the data layout and the I/O scheduler generated by Flamingo were efficient. And for that, we generate these parameters for the Pelican rack and compare them to the manually designed original Pelican storage stack. And for that, we use the Pelican simulator that has been cross-validated with the hardware. And we use the same workload as in the Pelican paper. So here I'm showing you the time to first byte in function of the workload rate for both the original Pelican in blue and Flamingo Pelican, which is basically the Pelican rack operated by the generic storage stack configured by Flamingo. And we can see that for all workload rates, the performance for both systems is virtually identical, showing that Flamingo is able to efficiently, automatically find an efficient data layout and I/O scheduling. The interesting thing is that the data layout that it finds is, for example, completely different from the one that we manually find out, but it is equivalent in terms of performance. So in addition to that, it is now possible to explore the impact of resource provisioning on the performance of Pelican. So we generate a rack description that has the Pelican topology, but is the least provisioned for all the resources, and we feed it to the Flamingo tool. And Flamingo will output a set of graphs that will describe the performance of the rack in function of the resource provisioning. So here, for example, is the time to first byte in function of the resource provisioning, such that each value represents a separate rack description with its own resource provisioning. And we can see that as the resource provisioning increases, latency drops, showing that Flamingo is effectively able to leverage additional resources. The first interesting thing is that here there are diminishing returns. So the amount of resources in the rack is very constrained, adding even a little bit of resources decreases latency a lot and improves performance. Another thing that is interesting is that here is a Pelican, and we can see that with the Pelican design, we actually haven't reached the diminishing returns yet, meaning that if we had the Flamingo tool when we designed Pelican, we could actually have increased the resource provisioning by just a bit to have much lower latency. And this is very well illustrating the benefit of the Flamingo tool. Now let's have a look at how long it takes to generate these storage stack configurations. So here we're looking at the CDF of the rack descriptions and in function of the storage stack configuration time. So we can run this in parallel for each rack description. So we run the solver, and it takes at most 9 minutes for the Pelican topology to generate the storage stack configuration. So this is quite efficient because it can be run in parallel. And we haven't just done it for Pelican. We tried many different racks, 7 of them, one of them being the Facebook cold storage rack, 1 Pelican, and 5 other racks that we designed specifically, rack descriptions that we designed specifically for the evaluation, that have different topology, different resource constraints. And we can see the number of rack descriptions it derived from them. And for all of them, Flamingo was able to compute an efficient data layout and I/O scheduler. And the details for that are in the paper. And the execution time is at most within a few hours and is growing linearly with the number of disks within the rack. So to conclude, cold storage racks are a very efficient way of addressing cold data storage. They are very low cost. They have a resource-constrained software, resource-constrained hardware and a software that deals with the constraints. And for that, because of that, they're very hard to design. And so Flamingo simplifies the design of cold storage by synthesizing the data layout and I/O scheduler parameters for a given rack description, and it allows to explore the impact of resource provisioning on performance. So it simplifies and speeds up the redesign of these racks. Thank you.
Thank you. I was going to ask if you'd evaluated it on other systems, but it looks like you have.
Well, we had several racks, yeah, okay. Seven different.
Did you have you provisioned an actual rack using the output from the system, or?
No. But we use the simulator cross-validated with the hardware.
Okay. Any other questions?